Good afternoon. Sorry for the slight delay. The Secretary General will update you on the first working session of this ministerial, and then he'll be happy to take your questions, as usual, Secretary General.
Good afternoon. We have just finished a meeting where NATO defense ministers discussed how NATO is adapting to a more demanding security environment. At no time since the end of the Cold War have we faced greater challenges to our security. Neither Europe nor North America can effectively deal with this on their own. Our alliance is as much needed as ever. NATO is good for Europe, and it is good for North America. We are all safer when we stand together. Today, ministers all agreed on the importance of the transatlantic relationship for meeting the key challenges to our security. And I welcome the very clear message from Secretary Mattis on the importance of the transatlantic partnership and the message from all the other allies that we need to strengthen the alliance in times of turmoil. Since 2014, NATO's deterrence and defense posture has significantly adapted. We have tripled the size of the NATO response force to 40,000 troops. We have established a 5,000-strong, very high readiness joint task force, ready to move in a matter of days. And we have set up 8 small headquarters in the eastern part of our alliance, stepped up our air policing, our training and exercises, strengthened our maritime presence, bolstered our cyber defenses, and as we speak, we are deploying 4 multinational battle groups to the Baltic countries and Poland. We are also increasing our presence in the southeast of the alliance, so our deterrence and our defense posture is solid. Today, we discussed the importance of sustaining this effort over time. This will be crucial. Defense is not just about what we do at home. It is as much about what happens beyond our borders. So we have agreed to strengthen our contributions to projecting stability, to enable local forces to protect their countries and to fight terrorism. We have moved from a large combat operation to a train, assist, and advise mission in Afghanistan. We started to support the coalition fighting ISIL through AWACS air surveillance. We have established a training and capacity building program in Iraq, increased our support to partners across North Africa and the Middle East, and opened a regional center in Kuwait together with our partners in the Gulf. We have deployed ships to the Aegean Sea to help curb the flow of migrants and refugees, and we will set up a hub for the south in Naples. And we have established comprehensive packages in support of Georgia and Ukraine. We continue a significant presence in the Western Balkans to ensure stability in the region. And we are working more closely with the European Union than ever before. But we also agree that NATO has untapped potential when it comes to training local forces and building local capacity. We have experience, tried and tested capabilities, staying power, and a network of 41 partners around the world who are ready to help and work together with us. So we discussed how we can better use NATO for the future. All these efforts must be underpinned by adequate resources and fair burden sharing. In 2014, we decided to stop the cuts in defense spending, gradually increase and move towards spending 2% of GDP on defense within a decade. Our progress so far has been good. In 2015, we stopped the cuts. In 2016, 22 allies increased their defense budgets. This is significant. And the figures we published yesterday showed a healthy increase of 3.8% in real terms across Europe and Canada when it comes to defense spending. This means $10 billion more for defense. Step by step, we are moving in the right direction. But there is still a very long way to go. And you know that the picture is mixed. Some allies have really started to increase. Some allies are still struggling with any increase of their defense budgets. Only five allies meet our guideline of spending 2% of GDP on defense. So we discussed how we can sustain the positive momentum and speed up national efforts to meet our commitments. For instance, through national plans and milestones to ensure steady progress. This is a discussion that we are starting today, and I expect the discussion to continue, and also be an issue that will be addressed by heads of state and government when they meet in Brussels in May. Our aim is to give our ambition for fairer burden sharing a strong boost when we meet in Brussels in May. With that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Okay. Wall Street Journal.
Secretary Mattis, in his intervention, said America will meet its responsibilities, but if your nations do not want to see America moderate its commitment to this alliance, each of your capitals needs to show support for our common defense. Do you interpret that as a threat? Do you see that as America making its support conditional? And how do you read that language?
Secretary Mattis expressed a very strong commitment to NATO and to the transatlantic bond and to the importance of strengthening NATO. And that was very much welcomed in the meeting because all the other ministers expressed the same commitment to the transatlantic bond, because we all understand that we are safer and stronger together. Strong NATO is good for Europe and good for the United States and Canada. And especially in times of turmoil, uncertainty, we need a strong transatlantic partnership and strong NATO. And that was the message from Secretary Mattis. At the same time, he underlined the importance of fair burden sharing and the importance of that those countries which are not meeting the target of 2%, that they have to increase defense spending. And all those who had the floor during the meeting expressed strong support to the same commitment, and many of those countries spending less than 2% expressed ambitions, plans, commitments to now really start to increase defense spending. And we have seen the first steps, because we have seen that the cuts stopped in 2015, and in 2016 we had a significant increase. And now we are discussing how can we make sure that that continues, because we have a long way to go. This has been my top priority since I became Secretary General of NATO. I have raised the issue of burden sharing, defense spending in all my meetings in all the capitals. I will continue to do so. And I look forward to working together with Secretary Mattis on addressing the importance of burden sharing across the whole alliance.
James?
Yes, Brooke Singer, James Defense. On the budgetary issue, is there any argument for the European allies to accelerate their 10-year pledge at Warsaw to reach the 2% goal, or should some other supplementary arrangement be agreed? And secondly, when you say national milestones, are you referring specifically to a national military expenditure milestone? Thank you.
We have started to move, and we have taken two important steps. In 2015, we stopped the cuts, and 2016, we start to increase. So we have, in that sense, started already to implement on what we decided in 2014, to stop the cuts, gradually increase and to move towards the 2%. The big question is now, how can we make sure that we continue, that we maintain the momentum? And that's exactly why I welcome ideas like, for instance, national plans. Some allies already have national plans, very clear commitments, roadmaps, how to move from the current spending level to 2%. Then it's possible to measure, it's possible to discuss the progress against the national plans and the national milestones on how to increase defense spending. Other allies do not have that kind of plans. So the question is whether we shall agree that all allies need these kind of plans, describing how they will meet the commitment, increase defense spending and meet the defense pledge we agreed in 2014, and also enabling us to review the progress in NATO. But exactly what kind of plans, what kind of review, and so on, is just an idea that has been discussed today. We will need some time to assess the idea, to develop the idea, and then agree later on. But the milestones, they will be connected to defense spending in one way or another.
General, just behind.
Michael Birnbaum from the Washington Post. I wanted to ask, what is your specific understanding of what it would mean for America to moderate its commitment to NATO, as Secretary Mattis said today?
For me, this is about that the U.S. commitment to NATO is more than words. It is also deeds. And the U.S. is delivering and stepping up its support for European security, because these days we see the deployment of new U.S. forces in Europe for the first time in many, many years. We will have a new armored brigade. A new armored brigade is deploying these days. And we will have more U.S. Equipment, more U.S. Exercises, more U.S. Supplies pre-positioned in Europe. So my takeaway from this meeting is that there is a strong U.S. commitment to NATO in words and in deeds. The presence of U.S. soldiers in Europe is going up, not down. And there is also willingness from the U.S. sides to continue to strengthen and to support, especially in new or, for instance, in the area where in new or not in new areas, but including, for instance, when it comes to the fight against terrorism, how NATO can be used more as a tool in the fight against terrorism.
Konarsan, lady in the second row. Lady in the second row. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Galina Dudina, Kommersant Daily Newspaper, Moscow. My question is, tomorrow morning there would be a discussion about cybersecurity issues. Will it be related to Russia too? Thank you.
So we are in the process of strengthening our cyber defenses. We have been working on that over some time, and we are constantly adapting our cyber defenses because the cyber threats is evolving and changing all the time. We have seen a sharp increase in the number of cyber attacks and cyber incidents. The attacks are more sophisticated, more intense. And we have seen reports also from many NATO allied countries about different kinds of cyber incidents and cyber threats. We have seen reports about Russia being behind several of them. And we see the same pattern when it comes to cyber attacks against NATO and NATO networks. We have seen an increase by 60% in the number of incidents, cyber incidents against NATO networks from 2015 to 2016. And that's the reason why we are strengthening our cyber defenses. We are sharing best practices. We are developing technologies. We are helping allies with strengthening their cyber defenses. We are doing more exercises. And we are also in the process of establishing cyber as a military domain alongside air, land, and sea. Some of these attacks are so sophisticated, and the information they are targeting makes it clear that the states, governments have to be behind. And as I said, there are several reports from different allies about Russia being behind at least many of those attacks.
Gentleman in the back.
Philip Løk from the Norwegian Broadcasting. Given today's meeting with Mattis and also him implying that they will have to reduce the commitment if Europe does not step up, do you think it's necessary to not only keep the momentum but increase the momentum and reach 2% before 10 years, maybe within 5 or 6 years, to actually live up to the expectations of the new US administration?
So far, that has not been on the agenda. The focus has been on how can we make sure that we continue to increase defense spending. And since we have seen a significant increase in 2016, I think that motivates all of us to do more. So the focus has been on how can we develop national commitments, national plans, to make sure that we implement what we have already agreed. Then I think we should have an open mind and sit down and discuss exactly how do we develop these national plans, how can we establish different kinds of milestones. I think it's a bit too early to be too specific and too detailed exactly on how we develop that tool, but I welcome a discussion to strengthen and to give even more support for the idea of implementing what we already have agreed. Let me just add that this is not the US telling Europe to increase defense spending. This is 28 allies, heads of state and government, sitting around the same table in 2014 and looking into each other's eyes and agreeing that we shall increase defense spending. So this is about implementing something which 28 heads of state and government has agreed that we will do together. And then, of course, I welcome all pressure, all support to make sure that that happens.
Lady in the front row.
Nina Elina, Vedomosti, Business Daily, Russia. I have two questions about terrorism. People here at NATO are always saying that NATO is not that actively involved in Syria now because its members already participate in anti-GIL coalition. So what could NATO offer as a military organization to its members in Syria in fighting terrorism that they can't do on their own? And my second question is about this new recently established hub in Naples. Could you please elaborate on how much this center is going to work on Syria issue?
First of all, NATO supports the coalition also in its air operations over Syria with our AWACS surveillance planes. But there has been no call for a NATO combat role or a presence inside Syria. And when I envisage or argue in favor of a stronger NATO role in combating terrorism, my main idea is not to have NATO in the high-end combat operations. Of course, NATO can do that if we are asked, but that's not my main focus. My main focus is how can NATO do more when it comes to training local forces, building local capacity, so someone can take responsibility for their own security and fight terrorism themselves. And there are, of course, big differences, but NATO has a lot of experience from Bosnia-Herzegovina, from Kosovo, and from Afghanistan. And in all these places, the success of NATO has been that we have been able to end combat operations and enabling local forces to take responsibility for stability in their own region. If there's any lesson learned from Afghanistan, it is that we should have started earlier to train the Afghans, enabling them to take over responsibility for their own security. I visited recently Bosnia-Herzegovina. We have a national army there, very much trained and developed by NATO. And, of course, that's key for the stability of Bosnia-Herzegovina. We have helped to develop the Kosovo Security Force, keys for the stability in Kosovo. So my answer is that there has not been any call for a NATO combat role in Syria, but I believe that in the whole region we can do more to build local capacity, because when ISIL is driven out of Mosul, when ISIL is defeated in Raqqa, someone has to be there and to stabilize the country, to keep the terrorists down, and to make sure that we can have a peaceful, lasting solution. And that's exactly why we need to train local forces, and NATO has a lot of experience and untapped potential to do more of that. The center of Naples will be a cornerstone, an important element in our, efforts to assess, to coordinate, to understand the developments in the wider Middle East region, North Africa, including, of course, the developments in Libya.
Last question, Jan Augustin.
Vladimir Dobrovolsky from Russian News Agency RIA Novosti. Secretary General, today Pentagon announced the meeting that will be held tomorrow in Baku between the top military officials from U.S. and Russia, Generals Dunford and General Gerasimov. And could you tell us whether NATO has succeeded in contacting Gerasimov or arranging a meeting with him? And do you think that a new attitude of U.S. administration will make military-to-military contacts between Russia and NATO easier? Thank you.
First of all, I think it is important that this meeting in Baku takes place. The U.S. is the biggest NATO ally, and I welcome also that NATO allies on bilateral basis develop military lines of communications and develop the dialogue with Russia. In NATO, we have been able to convene two meetings of the NATO-Russia Council, where we also have addressed different military issues, including exercises, briefing exercises, military transparency, risk reduction, and other issues related to military issues, including with some military briefers in the room. So we have developed that kind of contact in the NATO-Russia Council framework. So far, there has been no direct contact between General Gerasimov and General Petr Pavel, but I know that there are work going on to see if we can develop also that kind of dialogue with Russia.
Thank you very much. That's all we have time for now, but we'll see you a bit later. Thank you.
Thank you.